Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
Upon further review, do you have a final thought on the Bears' botched replay from the Packers game?
Yeah, you know, I do. I have a final thought on that, and that is I talked to a bunch of people yesterday, and it was weird. I was talking about other things, but everybody wanted to talk about that play, and I saw around the league there were guys answering questions about it. You know, it's good to have a philosophy as to why you do it, but the bottom line, this seemed to be, this is weird, but two different people said this to me, and they were very insistent upon it. They did win the challenge. They did win the challenge, as if that mattered. Like, so what? They lost the ball. It didn't. No. They won the challenge. What they saw, what they were looking at, is whether he was out of bounds or not. And they were right about that. And whoever, and it is one guy basically in the box that tells him whether to challenge or not. And for whatever reason, they didn't see the fumble. And it was the fumble. They thought if he was in bounds, then he, you know, was jamming a hand into the, they thought he had possession of the ball or he had one hand on it. He didn't. It was just a kind of a fluke play, but I guess my final thought on it is that shouldn't be the reason you fire the guy. Okay? That, you know, we can sit here and say that's emblematic of the Bears' bad luck, okay? Or I don't think it's incompetency. I mean, not of the head coach. Maybe of the people that are in the box, maybe of you know, the you know, whatever system they have in place for replay. But I don't think he was flat out incompetent on that, which is evidenced by the look on his face when he closed his eyes and the pain that kind of swept over him. First the jaw agape and then the eye closed pain. That they were looking at one thing and they challenged it and they won the challenge. Unfortunately, by doing that, they ruined the whole thing. And I'd like to know more about their philosophy. No one asked him that question. I would love to know what philosophically he thinks about it and you know, why you're changing that play there. Why is having the ball at the two not good enough? And the answer is, well, we thought he was in. And, you know, why run another play? Things happen. Things can go bad. It was one of the most bizarre plays you'll see. But I don't know that that's the reason you fire the coach. You fire the coach because he can't win. And I guess that's emblematic of them not being able to win. But that was, I guess what I'm saying is that could happen to a lot of people if you don't have the right people looking at it.
Yeah, he said we have very smart guys. Okay, when you have to tell everyone how smart the guys are, then, you know, that's an issue because the smart guys would
have figured. We're going to get the best people.
Yeah. Look, if you're coaching players up not to do that because you know the one result you can't have is losing the ball, then why is said coaching staff not looking for that on the exact replay that you told the guy not to do? But here you are, he did it, and now
stamming.
Yeah, why wouldn't you consider whether he had possession of the ball or not? But you're right, Mo, that's not why there's got to be change here. You know, 11 first half penalties, four of them declined, coming out of a bye week, and Mark Potash looked it up, and you know, the average 3.8 penalties coming for teams coming in the first half out of a bye.
Do you see what Potsy's done with his Twitter account?
Mm-mm.
He has put the Firefox, you know, insignia or whatever as his avatar.
On what?
Firefox.
Yeah, really? No, I saw a bunch of people tweeting that yesterday.
Bunch of
I didn't
are
know
doing
that. Potsy did that.
Apparently, well, a lot of fans have been doing it.
Right.
And now you got a...
When you start looking at
Porter fan,
yeah, that it? When you start looking at some of these statistics, though, and you know the negative plays, the Bears lead the league in negative rushes with 45. Now, that's the strong suit while they develop.
Well, think about it. You know, you got, obviously, Cohen is the kind of guy that's going to have negative rushes. They're going to be negative plays with kind of a gadget guy. And now with the tight end situation, you saw Jordan Howard hit in the backfield.
Right.
Every time he went outside.
Right.
They could not block the linebackers.
Right. Now they don't have a tight end. Oh, yeah, they drafted a big guy who was supposed to be able to block and catch things in the red zone.
He's not doing much of anything.
Yeah. No.
But Deion Sims, the illness, that was really
well. Low. He was also a turnstile when he was healthy too.
He can block a little bit.
A little bit. But
better than the head.
Look, the everyone's going to talk. Remember that game is the replay game, the challenge game.
Yeah.
How about the game that no one was prepared? And Mitch Trubisky talked about lack of focus and everything. How does that happen? You had a bye week. The other team short. Let's go over the whole thing. You're never going to have a Packers game set up so well for you to go ahead and finally beat the rival Green Bay Packers without the Hall of Fame quarterback, and you didn't get the job done. So, the final thought is that was the death knell.
Final thought for me is more big picture, more about the NFL. I really don't like that rule at all, and it doesn't have anything to do with the result of the play and the Bears losing what should have been an obvious score, maybe a touchdown, who knows. But a league that loves to promote scoring, and scoring seems to be down across the board, and they're struggling for ratings. For me, on a defense, to get a turnover, you have to do something for me. And on this play, the defense does absolutely nothing. They're not even falling on the ball. They're not picking it off. They're not stripping the ball. In this case, I really don't like it that, it's falling out of his hands as he's falling out of bounds near the pylon. Touchback, ball goes the other way. I don't care for the rule.
So what do you do? If you fumble in the end zone...
But do you like it when a guy hits the pylon and scores a touchdown? Like guys dive and, it's a very exciting
play. I don't mind it.
So how do you avoid...
Where do you spot the ball? If he had fumbled...
If you're declaring that the pylon is part of the end zone and you're fumbling into the pylon, isn't that like fumbling out of the end zone? I mean, I'm just saying, you'd have to get rid of the other play, too.
In this situation, he was fumbling it before he got to the pylon, correct?
Right, but in effect, if you're fumbling in the end zone, where you retain possession, spot the ball where? If it goes out of bounds, say it goes out of the back of the end zone, what do you do?
Yeah.
So
no,
that's
I don't.
The same thing. So you're saying, I'm hearing what you're saying. I'm just trying to take it to a logical conclusion.
Sure.
Yes.
I would mark him out of bounds at the one. Isn't this how the rule used to be? They would mark him out of bounds?
They've made the pylon part of the end zone in order to have that play where the guy's diving out of bounds and hit the pylon and he's in.
Yeah, so, I would mark him out of bounds before. Probably the one on this specific instance.
So there's no real consequence for losing the ball?
No.
In the end zone?
Not in this case, not as
you're diving
in the pylon.
But say it was out of the back of the end zone. There's no real consequence. You get the ball at the one. Is it first down and goal?
The very fact that the guy said they don't want you diving at the pylon tells you that they know what happened, right?
And right. They know the results. Yes. But I'm just saying I don't care. That is the rule, and they knew the rule, but I just don't care for the rule.
I don't really care for any rules either, Joe, so I'm with you there. I'm a real rebel.
Yeah.
Anarchy.
Kevin Chaos over here.
I wear a t-shirt on class picture day. My final thought on the botched replay. I don't want to get too grand scheme and macro with it like you guys just did, but I just think that 10 years, 20 years from now, people will remember that as the defining moment of the John Fox era in a career where he couldn't win more than 6 games a season when he was here. Abject failures left and right, injuries, this, that, and the third. The number one thing people will remember is challenging this play, winning the challenge, but giving the ball away when you could have had 4 shots to get it in the end zone from the 2-yard line. It's just, it will go down as one of the biggest blunders in Chicago coaching history, quite frankly.
This is not, they lost by 7 points. I get it. But this is like, to me, this is like the Janet Jackson nipplegate at the Super Bowl, which overshadowed a fantastic Super Bowl. We spent 5 days when I was doing national radio. I was at the game. I was doing national radio at the time.
Yep.
We spent 5 or 6 days talking about Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson's nipple instead of talking about the
malfunction.
Game. Okay? Yeah. This was part of the game. This is an abject failure of John Fox. We asked a question last week, is this a must-win game for the Bears? It wasn't a must-win game for the Bears. I said at the time it was a must-win game for John Fox. And on top of the fact that they lost, and they're now 0-6 when favored, when he's the head coach, he had that happen. That we've not seen that kind of emotion caught anyway on television that we saw, because he knew at that moment,
oh yeah,
oh my goodness gracious. Oops. Like, this is how, as Kevin, yeah, he will be remembered
and
for this.
I don't think that's fair. That's what I was saying. I agree with Kevin completely.
Fair or not, but it's all, you know, but going back to fair, this is one, but if I had to rank them, maybe fifth on the list of why they lost that game on Sunday.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
There are so many
that's
more
exactly
reasons
right
that they yes lost this game
that's
than
exactly
this.
Right.
And unfortunately, all we're doing right is focusing. Well, if they would have got that touchdown, they would have won the game.
No.
If they would have got that touchdown, I went to public schools, it would have been 23-23. Okay? That's seven more points, assuming they got it. So they still would have been tied. And guess what? Fox, the defense, the offensive line that gave up all those sacks, the fact you couldn't get Cohen on the field, the fact that you got all those penalties, the fact that you couldn't get to their quarterback, okay, you couldn't stop the run, all those things would have bit them in the rear end in overtime, and they would have lost the game. So there. This is about fifth on the list. And unfortunately, it's number one with
it's
huge exclamation point.
Yeah.
All we're doing is
yep
focusing on this
right
when there's so many other things to be focusing
totally
on.
Totally agree
here
with that.
You know, great question.
After five games, are you any more or less confident that Mitchell Trubisky can be a franchise quarterback?
A little bit less confident. And again, it's not appreciably. I was hoping to see more. And the fact that he had a part to play in that loss, and he made some poor decisions and held on to the ball and created some of those sacks, the majority of them, I would say, of the five. That's a little disconcerting, because I believe the kid is intelligent, and we'll see, you know, if he ends up being an accurate passer out of the pocket and, you know, under center and all those things that you knew coming in were going to be part of the learning curve. But it's not, I'm not saying the guy's a bust by any stretch of the imagination. I just, and again, you know, it's well documented. Who's playing around him? Who are the difference makers? Who are the playmakers? There aren't any. I mean, when we're celebrating Dontrell Inman's debut because of 88 yards and six catches, that tells you all you need to know. And the offensive line didn't have a great day either, so. No, I'm a little less confident because each week I see a little bit more that needs to be worked upon. And that's it. I mean, you knew it was going to be growing pains, and he's certainly showing you that he has those.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that nobody on this panel gave him less than like a C plus yesterday when we were grading him. I think that's kind of just interesting, just kind of crazy. I mean, that's what passes for satisfactory. He didn't turn the ball over. I think there's way too much of that going on. I just think that we are crazy in terms of the way that we evaluate a quarterback around here. And I agree with you, Brian. I think that Trubisky, here's the thing about quarterbacks. You got to be in the right scheme with the right team, with the right people around you, and you can really have success. I do think that that Deshaun Watson will end up being the better quarterback.
Yeah.
And that he was the better player in the draft. And I know that he went to a better situation in Houston where they had obviously much better receivers and they had have better coaching. But Tom Savage came back in and that offense went nowhere and did nothing, right?
Right.
Because they really needed him. And he's got a lot of charisma and some good things about him, does Deshaun Watson. So I don't know. You know, I don't think I'll ever really understand why Ryan Pace moved up one spot and gave up all the picks. Again, if the kid works out, we'll never talk about it. But I think he could have had him anyway. And if not, Deshaun Watson, pretty good consolation prize. So that one brings into question Ryan Pace in my mind. And I think this is the problem. I think when we try to evaluate this kid, we're really saying, you know what? John Fox wants to run a scheme that is so conservative that it's better to take a sack as long as you don't fumble than it is to throw the ball with the possibility of a pick. So they're coaching some aggression out of the kid, which is a little bit, you know, it's a good lesson, but interceptions happen. Quarterbacks throw interceptions, they learn from it, right? You can't play scared. You can't be worried about that and take sacks and all the rest of it. I think that it's inexcusable that there are no weapons around the guy. Elshon Jeffrey, they knew they were not going to bring him back. They didn't bring him back, and they didn't replace him. They thought they could replace him from within. Now they've traded a draft pick for the fifth receiver in San Diego, who is the best receiver in Chicago. One man's trash, another man's treasure. Marcus Wheaton, how much money did they give this guy? Is he making $6 million guaranteed or something on a two-year deal?
I think it's around $7 million.
Whatever it is, it's crazy. He's got what? A catch? Two catches? What has he got?
Two years, $11 million.
He's done nothing.
Help.
Okay? And $6 million guaranteed, by the way. He's done nothing. And that is really, that is not a good signing. They haven't done a great job of getting people around him. We're heading to an offseason where everybody now, after that game, everybody wants the coach fired. A week makes a huge difference in the NFL. You know, the Bears could come and beat Matthew Stafford, and we could be having a different conversation come Monday. But everybody's fed up with it, and everybody wants him gone. And now you're talking about a quarterback that's going to change scheme. Dowell Logan's doesn't seem like he's going to survive no matter what. So who runs the scheme? Who's coming in here? Who's the next guy? If you bring Fox back, how many different coordinators is this kid going to have? You're getting into this Jay Cutler change in offense every year thing. That kid, they don't, you know, I never understood, and we talked about it at the time. If you are going to draft a quarterback, why is John Fox here? It doesn't help John Fox, and it doesn't help the quarterback. It makes no sense that they didn't make a move. If you did make a move, then you're supposed to bring everybody back. And no one wants that. So they're in a trick bag with the kid GM who never left the building in New Orleans. And you got to wonder who he knows and how he knows him. And everybody fantasizing about big name guys coming in here. Well, Jim, you know, hey, John, Jim Harbaugh played here. Oh, he's dying to come back and save the Bears. He's also dying to get $10 million. And you're giving five to Fox. And then he's going to want Ryan Pace as his general manager. He's got his own guys.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm coming in, but you go. You know, it's going to be trying to hire Nick Saban. It's going to be Jerry Angelo. Yeah, I'll come, but I want your job. That's the problem.
It's with the expectation that I had for Trubisky whenever he was going to play, and I am actually happy that he's going to end up, barring health, start 12 games this season in his rookie year when the big plan was, maybe one or two at the very end of the season. And there's another botch move because of Glennon. That's why he's out there. But with the expectation of the coaching staff that you have and the receivers that you do not have, I mean, the caliber of receiver they have, how many of them would be on a somewhat middle-of-the-road competitive NFL team? Maybe one? I don't know. You know, that's what the Chargers are. Actually, they're below expectation, and Dontrell Inman, they didn't really have room for him, and he is their Bears' best receiver right now. So I'm taking it as a rookie quarterback and what he has around him, and I'm actually a little more confident, and maybe it's not so much because of Trubisky. I'm going back to last year instead of comparing to Deshaun Watson, and I'm taking a look at Wentz and Goff. Two guys in the NFC, they are the future of the position in the NFC that the Bears are going to be going up against or trying to catch at some point in the playoffs, maybe eventually. And how were Wentz and Goff doing a year ago? Very different situations. Wentz, hot start. Played well at home, really struggled on the road. In his first five games, he had seven touchdowns, one pick, a quarterback rating of 100. But second half of the year, he really fell back. The league caught up to him a little bit. Had a very high completion percentage at 65. Trubisky's is 51 so far. And Goff, he lost the first five games he started. His completion percentage was 55. His rating was 65. And what's interesting is, the Rams receivers a year ago, very comparable to what the Bears have right now. John Fox, is he comparable to Jeff Fisher?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you have zero confidence they're going to bring in an offensive mind, right? That's the problem.
That's it.
We didn't think that the Rams would. Did we think they'd have a, 31 years old? It's ridiculous. A 31-year-old head coach that would completely flip that team and the difference they would make in personnel. We didn't think that. I'm not here to say that next year we're going to pop up and see Trubisky having three touchdowns, 355 yards like Goff did this past week, or them being a legitimate contender for the Super Bowl in a year. I don't see that happening. But because of what I've seen out of Goff and how much that has changed, it does give me some hope.
A little bit of hope, because coaching is more important, in my opinion, in football than any other sport. You know, it's all about the scheme. It's all about innovation. It's all about getting fresh ideas into the building. And John Fox, Dowell Loggins, between them, don't have one fresh idea at all. So I think you do have to hold on a little bit of hope that with a better coaching staff, with more talent around him, with a full offseason, a full camp as the guy, you would look toward progress in year two. So right now, I would say that I'm about the same. I'm not any more or less confident because I think it's an incomplete grade because it's just it's one guy out of 11, and he's got very little help.
Incomplete grade, Kevin's right. Listen, you got to fall before you can walk. I'm thrilled that he's getting the amount of snaps that he's getting, but Sunday, again, a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage just didn't look right to me. Did not look right to me. So he's got to work through that. He's got to work through that.
He's an idiot. Next question.
Now that Nico and Bobby Portis are sharing the same building, should there be an enforced sit-down between the two? And what now?
Yeah, I think they have to get him in the same room and they have to try. And I don't think it's right now. I think you can wait a couple more weeks because the guy's not ready to play. But at some point, maybe you call them both in the office and let them walk out, whatever. You've got to try to mend this thing and someone has to intercede. And time's not working, but it's only been a month, right? It was October 17th when it happened. So give the guy a couple more weeks. Let him get healthy. Let him get back ready to play. And then you got to force the issue. And I think John Paxson will do it. I think he understands that. I think it's a very awkward situation. And I think that Bobby Portis is as much at fault as Nico, if not more. And it's got to be very hard for Nico to feel like an outsider and all that. So hopefully that will dissipate as he spends more time at the facility and he's around the team and he's allowed to do more things. But you can't, before you make a decision, you got to make an attempt to get the two of them in a room together and try to talk it over.
When you hear John Paxson said that we want him to start coming around more and it is on him to do that, meaning Nico, and the more, once he's cleared, okay, once the doctors give him the green light to play, if Nico is still insisting that he can't share the same locker room, be on the bus, whatever it is, where does this go? I mean, could the Bulls, in fact, suspend Nico until he does sit down and at least talk, or John said that they have to do what's best for the team. They can't trade him until January 15th. And Mully, you said it spot on. What's his trade value? Nil, because everyone in the league knows what's going on here. So that, at what point do they play hardball and say, guess what, Nico, we've tried giving you time and space, everything else. You're cleared to play. You need to be in practice. You need to be on the floor with the guy. And can you imagine how would people around the team react? How would people around the league react if they, in fact, took a hardline stance and said, now you're suspended without pay until...
Well, they got to try something. I don't know about suspending him without pay or any of that, but something's got
to
happen.
I mean, as Pac said, they keep talking to the representatives. They keep talking to Nico, and nothing's changed. And I don't know that another month goes by. The only thing that's going to happen in another month is likely he'll be cleared to play by the team doctors. And then their hands will be forced. And do they turn around and say, okay, we've tried it the easy way or the tried to be delicate about it. Now you're not drawing a paycheck because you're AWOL. You're not part of the team. Be interesting, but I would not rule that out. And then we'll see how the players union handles it too, because they're representing both players.
He just got in the building. I don't think this is the time for that. Now, it's been a month. You would think things would cool off a little bit. Just being in the same building, I would think eventually, this is how it normally works out. Maybe Nico's a little bit different. When you have a situation like this, the ice gets broken eventually, and then as time goes on, it goes away. And now it doesn't sound like it's going down that route. But at this time, the day he gets in the building, that is not the time. You're still two full months away from that trade point at January 15th, and you're going to get pennies on the dollar if you decide to make that move. You have to wait it out for, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks, because you still have plenty of time after that to just see if things relax a little bit, less tension. But yeah, I would think that eventually they're going to start to talk, but now's not the time to force them in a room. Now, in 3 weeks, I'd have no issue if they decide to do that.
Isn't this supposed to be the stuff that Fred is good at, being a people person and being a friendly guy and facilitating relationships and growing the man, if I can borrow a Mark Trestman phrase there? You shouldn't have to enforce a sit down. I think, like Joe said, this is something that should probably come about organically. I think Nico is clearly upset still, the fact that he was in the building yesterday and there was that awkward situation there where he was kind of there and nobody was really addressing him or anything like that. It's all very bizarre, but I think organically something will come about and these guys will eventually make up and put it all behind them. I just think that it's going to take some time.
Really? First of all, why is Paxson answering these? Like, that? Where's Gar?
No, John said okay. From now on he's going to be the face of the organization.
So then, thank you. Then, guess what? You're in charge. Does Jerry have to come in on the private plane? Where is Michael Rind? You're a laughing stock. Oh, we got to give it time. We got to let it breathe. Make it organic. I mean, I want to hear from HR people. Could you imagine? I mean, how many times at the score have two people not talked? And does it fester and let it go? No. The people in charge get the two people together, or the people in charge have a conversation with the two people.
With the opportunity or the almost having to have facial surgery because it's not just not talking. It's
But guess what? The Bulls let that go on. The Bulls condoned that by the fact that Bobby Portis and Nico are still on the same team. And if Bobby is now willing to say, listen, and he was quoted, we have the audio, I'm willing to open arms. I'm not going to him, but if he walks up here, I'm not going to say anything bad. I'm not going to not talk to him. So is Nico the problem? If Nico's the problem, then Jerry needs to get in here. If John can't do his job, okay, that's John's job.
Yeah, John's doing his job.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
No, he needs to make those two talk. How like do you adults. Know what I mean? Brian, he puts them in their office and he says, listen, knock it off. I'm on the radio, so I can't use the words I want to use. Okay, knock it off.
It's different. You guys got representation.
They can come in too.
He can threaten lawsuits. I mean, with the team and he could threaten to have Bobby Portis arrested if he really wanted to.
Almost any answer to any question sounds like an excuse.
Should the Cubs make a trade for Zach Britton or spend the long-term money on Wade Davis?
Interesting to hear Theo Epstein yesterday once again telling you how important it is to have that closer identified from the day you break camp. Because early on in the first month, if you don't have that role defined and the responsibility given to one person, a team can really kind of flounder and start having guys, starters trying to do too much and closer by committee normally doesn't work. But also saying, hey, but everyone knows we don't pay long-term deals and big-time money for closers. So I would, Zach Britton is intriguing. And when they were talking about him around the trade deadline, instead end up with Justin Wilson, I was really excited about that. I guess the idea here is that you're going to get one guy, Zach Britton. If you trade for him, he's going to get 1 year of arbitration. Then he's eligible. It's kind of like what you do with Wade Davis. The question is, who's Jorge Soler? I mean, who you send it to the Orioles? At some point, I think they need to. Wade Davis is a guy they know. They know what he did, and I think you have to pony up. I would prefer you spend the money. Now, I know they're going to say, well, we can use that money for Alex Cobb or some of these other guys. That's great. You have plenty of money. And I would rather that they just sign Wade Davis and then figure out the trades for use your prospects for bigger fish like starting pitching.
I would trade for Zach Britton. I think that he's a really good option, and I would trade something for him. I don't think you have to trade a frontline star to get him. I think that you got to give up something. But as you say, the contract situation, it's like trading – Jorge Soler for Wade Davis, and I think that the thing is, Wade Davis had an unbelievable year. I think inevitably he's going to take a step back. I think you look at Zach Britton, 2 years ago he had an unbelievable year, and he took a little step back last year, and I think he can get back to being that guy, and then you build your bullpen around it, but I would actually make a move for Zach Britton. I think he's that good.
I would look at Wade Davis, bringing him back. With all the money that you have coming off the books, likely Arrieta being gone and John Lackey, even though he's back into the rotation guy, who still paid a bunch of money. Britton is 2 years younger. What's interesting, when you take a look at the numbers, they're just about identical.
Yeah, right.
Everywhere you look, even walk rate, which I've criticized Wade Davis for, it's just about the same for Britton, and they both have some injury history here. I think part of this decision will go into the bullpen, guys that they've talked about, and we've talked about how much do you trust? What are they in the end? You have a lefty in Justin Wilson and a righty in CJ Edwards. Do you believe in one more than the other? And would that make you lean towards a righty or lefty as your closer? If you still really believe in Justin Wilson, think he can be something great, do you want two lefties coming in at the end of the game when you're facing lineups that you're trying to beat? that are heavy right-handed. But I would bring back Wade Davis because I'm not going to have to give up a young player.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though they say that they don't want to pay money for a closer, you know, you're just going to have to eventually do it if you have the need. And it's better to just spend the money, which they have plenty of, than to actually give up an asset. While I think Zach Britton, you know, like Joe said, he's a couple years younger. He's not appreciably better or anything. They're pretty similar players, despite, you know, one lefty, one righty. So I would just pony up the money instead of giving up an asset.
Let's make that a trifecta for the last three of us. Yes, I pay the money, don't give up assets. Not for a closer that you don't have control for more than 1 year on anyway.
This is a very important question.
Should the White Sox try to sell high on Avi Garcia?
I'm tortured by this question for one reason, which is I like Avi and he's a guy worth watching, but the answer is yes. I don't know that he has enough trade value to get you anything back, but I would definitely examine that and see if you could get something back. So I have to say yes to this because, you know, as much as I don't want to, I think that, you know, regardless of what they have or don't have, you've got a guy here that you could seriously maybe get something else for. They're not ready to win yet, and I don't know that they're ready to pay him yet. So he had a great year. Might be able to trade him, get something, get another asset or two. I'd do it.
He's got, 2 years of arbitration coming this year, this offseason?
So when you get good is when he's gone.
Right. Or you know, he'll be 27. You've been waiting on this guy, right? He finally looked like the guy you've been waiting on.
He showed up.
And his attitude seemed to change, and he finally stuck to his new diet and workout regimen because he had a false start on that a couple of years ago where he was ballyhooed coming into camp. Look at the Avi workout all offseason, and by the end of the season, he looked like Puffy Avi again. I'd hold on. I don't know that I don't know what you're going to actually get for him on the open market because I think there are a lot of people
right.
looking at him with the same skepticism. Was that just a one-off? Was that just the career year? Or is this the new guy? And
I wouldn't give him away. I'm just saying I'd listen.
Yeah, but I don't know what you would get. You know, right. necessarily you would get fair value. I don't even know what fair value is for a guy who's shown it for 1 year. But I'd keep him around and see where this. You know, there's a second year there, a second consecutive year. What's going to get an arbitration? Is he going to double his salary? I mean, you know, he's going to not going to jump from $3 million to $10 million, is he? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some generous arbiter is going to say, yep, those are the numbers. Let's give him $10 to $12 million. I don't think that's happening. But if you can get him for $6 or $7 million, and the ideal would be to go and sign him to a contract if you're going to keep him. But I would keep him around and see how this plays out.
Are they concerned that he's going to go back to the Avi from before last season? It's his age 27 year, and they've been clear about it. They're not going into free agency. It is not time for that. They're not expecting to win right now. They're still all about acquiring talent. So, yes, I would try to sell high on Avi Garcia, but something I just point to is J.D. Martinez and what he did for the Diamondbacks down the stretch. The Tigers thought they would get a lot more than what they did for him. And this is a guy now looking for a couple $100 million. I doubt he gets it, but he was a big part of what the Diamondbacks did in the second half and getting into the postseason. How much can you get for a corner outfielder
right.
that you're going to have for a year or two? So the market will tell you this, but I would try to sell high on Avi.
You know, it's interesting you bring up J.D. Martinez. He's another guy who really didn't blossom until later in his career, similar to Avi last season. While the power numbers certainly aren't the same, you know, Garcia did hit 330 last year. And while I don't think he'll do that again, I think 26, 27, 28, these are the prime years for a hitter. And I think he found something, you know, something clicked on whatever level. And I think selling him right now would be a poor decision.
All right. That is the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.